Build network automation tools and share them with your entire network operations team safely and reliably. You can do this with Itential. Visit itential.com to find out more. That's itential.com. On today's Heavy Networking, a roundtable panel considers whether or not we need modern networking. And this isn't just an old guy yelling at clouds. This is a legit question that I've been pondering the real world value of. An overlay network probably exists these days to help deliver a security solution. All right, is overlay everywhere overkill, or is that the architecture that we need today to deliver a safe, secure, and reliable network to our businesses? We didn't always have overlays. Back in the day, we did other things, and we did okay. I'm Ethan Banks, along with four network engineers that have opinions. Drew Conry Murray, our normal co-host, is off recording a different podcast right now, but he should be back next week if his jet-setting schedule permits. I am joined by Anton Lonenbro, Mark Prosser, Lee Harding, and Kieran Sheldon. And these folks are all active on the Packet Pushers community Slack, which, by the way, you can join for free at packetpushers.net/community. Come on in, the water's warm. People helping people over in that Slack group. All right, guys, the four of you are all new as voices to the Heavy Networking podcast. So in a sentence or two, who are you and what do you do? Let's start with Kieran.
Hi, I'm Kieran Sheldon from Australia. Basically, I'm a infrastructure engineer working at an MSP, but I focus mostly on virtualization, storage, and backup, and within that, the NSX side.
NSX. We know why you're here. Okay, Anton.
Yes, my name is Anton Lonenbro. I'm a solutions architect at a small managed service provider back in Sweden.
Very good. Lee Harding.
Hi, I'm Lee Harding. I'm the founder of Proxility. I'm kind of a longtime software maker myself, and I've worked a little bit on the provider side in a Wi-Fi authentication company.
Excellent. Mark?
Hi, I'm Mark Prosser. I'm a network automation dev here in Toronto, Canada for regional telecom for the province of Ontario.
Okay, guys, so we want to start by defining the modern networking stack. I alluded to it in the intro a bit. I think it's a combination of overlay, underlay, and it seems like it's everywhere. Vendors are trying to sell us that sort of a solution. But Lee, I want to start with you. You're on the software side of the house, developing networking solutions. What's your take on what the modern networking stack is?
Well, it's always going to come from my side here, is that the modern networking to me is kind of the move from static hardware-oriented networks to software-defined, programmable, manageable, observable kind of networks, in the simple words, right?
So if you say programmable and so on. So from a standpoint of what the packets are looking like on the wire, does that necessitate an overlay in your mind to accomplish what you might want to accomplish with programmability?
I got to admit, I don't necessarily understand what overlay means in this context, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the packets on the wire look any different, right? It's still going to be IP or layer is on top of it, but the connectivity, the rules, the encryption, protection, those things are primarily where I encounter it, right? As a software developer, my concern is just, I want to build some functionality on the network, right? I want to build a new application or some kind of service. And that requires, obviously, networking. People want to be connected, systems need to be connecting. But how that happens has changed a lot over the years. And now I get the opportunity as a software developer to go in and configure things maybe in ways that wouldn't have been possible before, wouldn't have been economically viable before, and choose, you know, between different ways of getting that done. Like, you know, there's some different talk of different VPN technologies that's come up in this conversation. And that's part of it, where I can decide and change things these days really quickly, based on what I want to achieve for the infrastructure for my services, right? Experiment with things. And I think that's great. It's not everywhere, right? There's still things that cost a lot of money, but in terms of like the innovation in the software space, I think it's really starting to accelerate, because it is getting easier and easier for developers to try different things, right? And delivering novel services.
Yeah, I agree with Lee completely. I think the real idea behind the modern networking stack is that we in the past, historically, we had, you know, the domain-specific language, the CLI, you had a bunch of CCIEs, and that was our thing. We had it over here. No one could touch it. And you could send us a ticket and maybe ask about it, and we could respond back. But the whole point behind the modern networking stack is to open it up to the infrastructure, open it up to the developers, and help it be part of the services that we deliver in our networks.
So you guys see the modern networking stack then, the chief thing that defines it is that programmability, that flexibility, so that you can, well, Lee, from your perspective, it was delivering solutions. Mark, from your perspective, it was making it accessible to other folks within IT.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I think, to be honest, sometimes in the past, us networking folks weren't the best to work with. And so developers wanted another solution to interact with us, or maybe even sidestep us in some scenarios to deliver those solutions. So I think that's why, like, for example, layer two networks everywhere over an overlay became so pervasive, because they could just connect to the network and just get their applications working, right? And then the application and programmability came later so they can get more telemetry and maybe decide where they want those solutions to be.
Kieran, we haven't heard from you yet. What's your take?
So I think that actually describes it really well, but also moving into, I'm going to talk NSX because that's all I know well. From a vCloud perspective, where you've got this layer where your customers can log into, they can work, make changes to their VMs, they can change the network, that accessibility is there as well. And it's easy to understand for those customers. So if they want to be able to make a firewall change, make a network change, they can within their segments. So similar thing to what a developer is after. They're able to just, this is what I need to connect to, this is how I can get through to it, and it's that ease of use.
Yeah, and I'd like to piggyback on that, Kieran, because I mostly am involved in networking by the cloud. We work a lot of with the cloud in Azure, and the whole point of, you know, the modern network stack is the accessibility and the scalability, the flexibility as well, being able to scale and, you know, implement modern solutions to modern problems.
So I want to go back to the whole definition of the modern networking stack then. I think there's still among the five of us sort of a general understanding of what we're talking about, but we haven't really defined it well for people that are listening to this conversation. Now, Lee, you said, well, I don't know what we mean by overlay here. Okay, so to me, what that means, if we go back to the old networking stack, if you will, we didn't have a lot of overlays, as in we weren't tunneling everything. We didn't stick everything in a VXLAN wrapper. We didn't stick everything in Genevieve or whatever the wrapper was, whatever the encapsulation was, and stick them in VTEPs to move them around a data center, let's say. Tunneling was the exception rather than the rule. You would do IPsec to interconnect a couple of businesses across the internet and tunnel that way. But it wasn't pervasive that so many packets were tunneled. And now we have these overlay meshes. So for example, SD-WAN, that is by definition some kind of an overlay mesh that is interconnecting a bunch of edges across whatever the transport might be, typically the internet. NSX, Kieran, since that's your thing. I mean, that's, again, I think of that in the same way. You've got everything is encapsulated in you do VXLAN and NSX, but you can do other encapsulation types as well, right?
Genevieve now, but yes.
Is it Genevieve primarily? That's where they go?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's really what I was getting at, where to facilitate what we're trying to accomplish here. And in an enterprise perspective, a lot of times it's about security, some kind of a security solution, separation, segmentation. You've encapsulated everything. And it just adds this layer of complexity to the network stack that an engineer has to look at. So that's where I'm coming from. Would you guys agree with where I'm going here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Okay, that's the thing that I'm getting at. Now, I notice a lot of you are coming from the provider perspective as well. From an enterprise perspective, a lot of these solutions are in play now too. So Cisco ACI was an early entrant into this space, and Cisco sold a lot of ACI boxes. VMware NSX, of course, we've mentioned. Cisco DNAC is, I was going to say it's a cousin to ACI, but it isn't really. It's its own thing. It's a different animal. And there's other of these, you know, fabric kind of solutions. Do you have takes on any of these? And if so, what was your use case?
I mean, if you bring it back to IPsec, you think about what that used to look like on a Cisco ASA. It was, maybe for some application developers, it was pretty archaic in terms of the ways we would deliver services, where they were doing overlays with things they have now, for example, like Nebula and WireGuard and all these things. It just seems so magical in comparison. The other thing as well is, how long did it take us to get MACsec in the network, where we were doing SD-WAN before that? It's kind of crazy to think about.
Well, MACsec to me is a whole different kind of thing. Like, you got a specific use case for MACsec to do that layer 2 point-to-point encryption. I mean, do you feel like you see that as an application developer? Like, MACsec is part of what you're looking at, or is it more like it's a service the network happens to deliver as opposed to something you're calling on?
I just think that, like, in the past, IPsec kind of solved that problem because MACsec didn't really exist, right? So that's why we went with IPsec and certain solutions in the enterprise over the last mile, things like that.
So you mentioned the software-defined WAN, SD-WAN. I mostly work with Fortinet's solutions there, where the whole, the overlay used to manage and get insights into the network. The use case for those has been in the enterprise for the security, and security and insight mainly.
Now, Fortinet will, as I recall, they're a pretty regular packet pusher sponsor. They're on, off and on throughout the year, and they've talked about that solution. They can track user identity from inside the network all the way through the SD-WAN. Is that correct, Anton?
Yeah, exactly. They've worked a lot with doing the whole package and integration. For an example, you have the campus network where a lot of other vendors, I think, they don't have the same integration into the edge deployment of SD-WAN for the campus network. But Fortinet has worked a lot with trying to integrate to complete the insight, so you can track, like you mentioned, user identity and device or asset management from the security perspective. I've seen a lot of use for that in the enterprises as well.
Okay, so you say use for that. So let's get into that. What? This is another part of my frustration with the modern networking stack. We have these capabilities, but are we using them? And then why? From a business perspective, if I'm trying to sell that sort of a solution to the business, how am I explaining it to them so that they're funding this thing and then supporting what could ultimately be a bit of inconvenience for the business, as security policies, the more granular they get, tend to be more frustrating for the business to live with?
Yeah, well, there's a trend for all these like SaaS solutions and the ZTNA solutions, where the complexity goes up, but in my opinion, the simplicity for the users is worth it. Having for instance, I'm just name dropping now, but the FortiClient ZTNA agent, and you deploy the rule sets, and you're able to monitor that as well.
So the business is going to look at that and go, okay, I'm spending money on this solution, and it gives me what? From their perspective, they're looking at ease of use. Is that the win?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of win in that perspective. Yeah. Ease of use for the end users, because my experience is that the end users are pretty much the drivers for these solutions. Of course, there's a financial incentive, but I mean, the at least in the customers I work with, the end users, they are a strong voice in choosing and driving the need for simplicity.
When you say like a financial incentive, I'm really curious about that aspect. Is it more about like delivering services faster, having less services to manage? What's your experience on that, Anton?
Yeah, so for at least a couple of my customers, they are not able to have the big IT department to run these networks or even the whole IT. So they want something that, you know, a unified management platform, if you want to call it that. And they want to log in, they want to be able to manage and monitor their network platform, basically. So that's, yeah, an enabler with this SD-WAN solutions is what I'm seeing, at least.
You just said something really interesting there, though. The whole, I want to open a console and be able to monitor my entire network without having to hire a CCIE or, you know, the super well-trained and experienced network staff to make it go. I'm reading into that a little bit, but that's what you're saying the business driver is, which means if I'm a networking vendor, a solution that I want to offer is the all-in-one. You can do everything. You can do security, you can do all of your transport, you can do all your connectivity, and you can do it all with, you know, with us and manage it all from one console.
More or less.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they promise, at least. But, you know, in reality, mostly there's edge cases where you can't really meet with just one management platform, or, you know, but yeah.
Well, we are seeing this more and more. So we talked to various vendors on packet pushers that come on to talk about their product, and that is one of the stories that several of them have told. We're the all-in-one solution. We're the all-in-one, the one-stop shop. You can come from us and get it all. Fortinet story that you happened to mention is a good one to me, in that they do have unified user identity and stuff that they can carry from end to end, and a lot don't. The SD-WAN edge is kind of different from the data center edge and the network edge, and there's not always good translation from the metadata you're monitoring in the data center versus what you're monitoring in SD-WAN. And so it doesn't necessarily feel like a unified solution, because it's just, again, there's these edges to the whole solution that are there. Another piece of this, though, was a word that came up earlier, complexity. These solutions are complex. If I stand back and I'm not looking at the fancy UI and I'm looking at the CLI like we did back in the day, and I'm checking out, you know, the configuration of devices, there's a lot going on under the hood to pull all of this off and make it happen, to the point of it being, is it even possible as a network engineer to effectively look at the running state of a switch, let's say, and troubleshoot some kind of a problem? Or are we past that point now where the networking stack is so complex, we have to rely on tools to diagnose what's going on with the network and give us information?
I guess one answer to that is, how many tabs in Secure CRT are you comfortable with, right? When you have to log in and look at many systems, it's I guess some people are superhumans and some people aren't, right? So maybe they look to different solutions.
Yeah, I think with switches themselves, you're able to log in at the CLI level, but when you start hitting routers and you're hitting firewalls that are more complex in what they do, because the switch is really just passing packets to a certain degree. But when you go outside of that particular device, that's where it's starting to become more complicated, because your firewall has so many sets of rules that you've got to look at. You've got different types of, whether you've got antivirus enabled on there, like Fortinet, for example, has all your different security levels. So there's packet inspections happening. There's so much going on. You need to be able to see that information in one location. So we're a Fortinet shop as well. So FortiManager gives that view. So you can see across your fleet of all your firewalls and that and see, okay, why are these not talking? Why is this not happening? With our switches, we rarely use a GUI to look at that. We can simply see it through the CLI. So as just depending on the complexity of that device, I think depends on how you view that information.
Hmm. Yeah.
Now, Lee, when I was kind of describing this, you were nodding your head vigorously. Did you have something to add here?
Well, I lots of things going through my head, but you know, the complexity I think is a key part, and the fact that you know a lot of this what used to be static configuration is now dynamic behavior, right? That's kind of the point. And that makes everything harder to diagnose, right? Can you log into any given piece of equipment and see exactly what's going on? Not probably in the way you used to, would be my guess. Not that I'm by any means an expert. But the other thing I was thinking about is, you know, in a former life, I was working on a vendor agnostic piece of software that was integrating with a lot of different network technologies. And that was getting increasingly more difficult to do over time, because as the software has become more and more sophisticated, it's become more and more distinct as well. So like there's a particular way to do it for vendor A versus vendor B. And that was a pretty big challenge. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. It's simplicity on one side, right, and complexity on the other, for sure.
Can you give an example, Lee, of what you were describing there?
So what I was dealing with is authentication, right? For guests and residents, you know, so working with ISPs or with large hotel brands and trying to figure out how to get their visitors on the right network with the right permissions and at the right bandwidth and whatnot. And even that simple thing, right, basically boils down to either using very old technology, right? So Radius or parts of Radius that even been deprecated by now, or writing custom software for each and every vendor and sometimes for each and every piece of equipment, right? Because they have different configuration methods.
Hmm. So were you writing an authentication server then with some kind of, here's what you can do now that you've authenticated, you know, like what a Radius server would deliver?
Yeah, so it's the presentation. So the portal or the guest experience, like what you see when you arrive, if anything, right? If you're arriving in your apartment, you don't see anything. But if you're arriving in a hotel, you're going to see some kind of branded experience and provide some kind of credential to authenticate who you are. And then, yeah, it gets into the authorization. So what VLAN are you going to be on? How much bandwidth are you getting? Are you going to, you know, business flow things like, are you going to see the ad for the particular credit card and that kind of stuff? So it's all built into the same platform. And requires, in some situations, different back and forth handshakes with hardware in order to get that simple task done.
At the root of that? Is it a lack of standards compliance, or is it the way standards are implemented are so unique per vendor that you've got to be custom per solution?
Yes. It's all the above.
And since you were in the hotel space, are there any back doors you can let the audience know so that we definitely get unlimited time and bandwidth at our hotel, prioritized ideally? Anything? Well, nothing?
Well, I can give you the hotels that give you that. So
that'd be good. Okay, so going back to the issue of complexity then, let's say I'm a junior network engineer walking into a network that maybe it's Fortinet, since we've been talking about that, or maybe it's Cisco DNAC or it's VMware NSX. What, you guys are more experienced, you've been around the block, you've dealt with a lot of things from a variety of perspectives. What advice do you have for that junior engineer who's walking into what we would look at and go, there's a lot going on here? How do you recommend they get their heads around these more complex solutions?
I'd probably go tell them to start with the fundamentals, because it doesn't matter how fancy the management GUI or portals are. I mean, like we've established here, in the background, it's all basics. You know, it hasn't changed in the past 20 years at least. So learned basics.
As in like Ethernet, IP, and those fundamentals?
Yeah, I mean, you got to start from the basics. Because if you don't know how things work at the lowest layers, you're not going to understand why it doesn't work at the upper layers.
So the fundamentals still matter despite the complexity of the stack and those upper layers, as you say. It would be a mistake to focus on the upper layers without first understanding the basics of transport. How packets and frames move around the network is still relevant.
Yeah, I would argue that, because that is what makes things tick, basically.
Yeah, I think as easy as the GUI is, or the platform that you're interacting with, the centralized management, understanding why you're making that change, so, or even how to make that change. So let's just say it's a subnet, and you don't calculate it correctly because you don't understand how a /24 or /23 differs, or something like that. Knowing those sorts of basics, or even like the ordering of firewall rules and how they interact, just those bare minimum basics, that helps with your troubleshooting if there's an issue. Or going back to that simple layer first of, if I do this, this happens.
It is story time with Ethan, courtesy of today's sponsor, Itential. For several years in the pre-automation days, I was on an engineering and architecture team that would help develop standardized code stanzas for new features that we would bake into our managed router offering. Now, once that configuration code was fully tested, we would move into deploying the code to client routers. By hand, often with a network operating system code upgrade required first. And as you can imagine, every so often something would go sideways in the process. The ops tech would fat finger something, a paste buffer would fail over the WAN because reasons. Something, usually a human something, would go wrong. My point is this, back at that time, there was no way to craft an automated process that would make sure the config went in exactly right every time and then share that process with the ops team. They would just punch the change into the CLI like a savage, and often they weren't even knowledgeable enough to react correctly when something went wrong. Time has thankfully moved on. Now we have infrastructure as code, and we've got developer tools and programmatic logic that we can use to code a mature playbook or a script that's got input checking and error handling and testing. And what's more, we can share these tools with our ops team without them having to understand a thing about the tool's inner workings or even have an environment to run the tool in. Now, how does all of this happen? With Itential. Itential can create an automation execution environment everyone in networking can use safely and reliably. To find out more about Itential's products and how they help you build an automation platform, visit itential.com. You can test drive Itential free for 30 days. That's itential.com.
So you guys might know that I also host the NS for Networking podcast, which is aimed at junior engineers, people or people who are in, you know, marketing for networking, in the networking industry, and they're trying to get their heads around all this crazy tech that we deal with every day. One of the questions that's come in to us repeatedly is, can you do a show on EVPN VXLAN? And me and my co-host Holly Metlitsky, who's an SE working for Juniper, were like, to get to that discussion, you've got to have this huge foundation. And so we've been working through, we've recorded 20 odd episodes now, as we're recording this heavy networking episode. And it's like, we got to talk about like layer one, layer two, layer three OSI model, since everyone seems to get that as a reference, even though I don't particularly love the OSI model, but it's still so important to be able to hold an intelligent networking engineering conversation. We have to talk about things like, well, how does a switch learn where MAC addresses are? You know, what's a bridging table? And, you know, what's an IPv4 versus an IPv6 address? What's a subnet mask? What's a default gateway? We've done all these kinds of shows, because as you begin thinking through what an EVPN VXLAN network is and how dependent it is on all of that stuff. I mean, we just recorded some episodes on like, what's a tunnel? You know, what is tunneling? which is a whole other conversation that can get very controversial. But we recorded that show, you know, nonetheless, all trying to lay enough foundation to get to this frequently requested topic of, can you talk about EVPN VXLAN? That's because it's like, no, not yet. We're not even close to be able to understand what's going on. You have to have all this other stuff. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you guys on the fundamentals. You got to know that stuff because all those upper layers that these complex solutions are showing you, kind of abstracting what's going on underneath them away, but that underneath stuff that's being abstracted away is super important. Can really help you get your head around what's going on.
Yeah, and I think one example from one of the shows that you've done with Enes for Networking was Spanning Tree Protocol. That yeah. How deep that conversation got to be three different episodes,
and how much we left on the table.
Exactly, and this is what a lot of people are missing in their understanding when they go to configure something that's in their early days without that basic understanding. Make a mistake within spanning tree and you've got issues, real big issues.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree completely. When you look at these panes of glass, they're just an abstraction, right? But all abstractions leak. When you're looking at your portal and you see everything go red, you say, well, maybe it's something in EVPN. How does EVPN rely on BGP? How does BGP rely on ISAS, OSPF, or something else? And then you get all the way down and you say, oh, it was actually an ASIC or TCAM issue. And they say, what is a TCAM? Maybe that's what it comes to. Like, all abstractions leak all the way up. And all these fundamentals are this optical shelf that's below it at layer one. Like, these things, we have to know them. Somebody has to know how to fix that. Because somebody who has the portal tells you that it's red. Okay, great. Why is it red?
The next AI model, it'll know how to fix it, Mark. Yeah. We'll be fine.
Yeah, that's also, I think that's also an issue with all these fancy GUIs and everything. You know, you are somewhat hidden. It's hidden from you. You press buttons, you click sliders or whatever. You don't see what actually happens in the background.
Or the names of things obscure the technology that's being used because it got a fancy vendor-branded name that really just means it's a VRF or, you know, whatever it is. That's actually what they're doing under the hood, even though they've named it something fancy. So you're abstracted from it yet again.
We never do that in the software world. Never.
Is it your fault, Lee? Is that what we're saying?
Well, the understanding the basics part, like that rings so true to me because it's been something I've tried to impart on people for a long time. One of the questions I ask like new software developers, which annoys them, is what's your favorite HTTP response header? It's a carefully worded question, right? It's a very specific thing. But the whole point is, do they even know what that means? Right. Mm. And can they actually name one? Because that fundamental thing that makes the entire everything you do on the internet, you know, with your browser or on your phone, and most likely is HTTP. And it's not magic. Yeah. Right. It's literally two pieces of computers exchanging strings. But until you really see that and you know what's in those strings and start to understand it, you can't really understand how a web app works and you'll make huge mistakes. And that's why a lot of web software is bad, frankly. Is because the people building it just don't understand the underpinnings, like what makes it work. And that's a long way from getting into IP, right? Which also influences how it works, right?
Another thing, Lee, that I'm interested in hearing about from you, you said as a software developer, you are enabled to make software that you couldn't have done before because of the modern networking stack. Can you dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, so I'm going to be a little bit biased here because I've spent a couple of decades working on software that largely runs in AWS. So my experience, you know, around configuring networks is how to configure networks in AWS, which to me is to write code, right? I create a template that says I want a system of networks that does this for me. And the this is defined by the requirements of the customers and governments around the world around privacy and security, but also around performance and around the creativity that I want to apply. So I think of things like I'm probably going to butcher the terminology, so forgive me here, but there are Anycast IPs that are provided by cloud providers now that allow me to treat IP addresses kind of like domain names and route them wherever I want. That's magical for a software developer, right? I don't actually know how that works. I vaguely know, but it means the difference between being able to support a world with my software or being able to support a region with my software. And that's
with a single IP address. Yeah, yeah. That's Anycast globally. Yeah.
Yep.
I see. I wouldn't have thought that would have mattered to you at all as a software developer. That's really interesting because to me as a network engineer, I look at Anycast and go, I'm going to announce this from these various places. I'm going to let BGP figure out the rest. And that's going to help me with some load balancing and a bit of redundancy. Yeah, and that's a good thing. But it turns out as a software developer, you care about that too.
Oh, absolutely. Because now I've been building distributed systems. And that's kind of my specialty. And I want it to distribute that workload across the world and put things close to the people who are going to use them. And knowing there's something like that out there now means I can architect the systems differently, right? Instead of me being responsible for the failover and the routing and trying to deploy things without bringing down all the systems. Now it's kind of taken care of for me as long as I configure it correctly.
Well, I would say in a lot of the development projects like that I've worked with, that developer doesn't know and doesn't want to know about the network, but would throw it over the wall to the network engineering team and say, hey, I need this to be delivered in this way. I don't want to know how it works. Don't want to think about it. Just give me a DNS name, perhaps, would be as close as they get. So it's, you're kind of making the point here that cloud has democratized that network behavior on some level, because you know you've got a primitive you can call on with an API or cloud formation or whatever it is that you're using, and you're going to summon that behavior as a developer without having to involve a network engineering team, perhaps.
Yep. Yeah.
Although you're scaring all network engineers by saying you didn't consult them. Let's just tell you that.
Well, yeah. There's some of that. We're all in jeopardy. We're going to lose our jobs to LLMs or something. But I do think that there are a lot more people they're doing networking now than there were when I was starting in my career, right? Networking was something that cost me $600,000 to get a server, right? That was my experience of networking early in my career. It's like, I want a web server. All right, $600,000 charged to your department budget. Well, that seems like a lot. Now it's copy and paste some stuff that I've done before and hit a button somewhere and I've got one. And I think that kind of innovation, what's happened around how easy it is to build new web properties or web APIs or all those things, everything that's HTTP based is basically free now. If you're a developer, you want to create a new API, you can create one, host it. And if nobody uses it, it doesn't cost you any money. And if they do, it just costs you based on how much it's used. That's not really a thing outside of HTTP, right? I can't do that with a DHCP server or DNS or anything else, right? It's much harder to set up those kind of services, but that seems to be changing, right? There's more and more happening. It's kind of, I would like to see more happen because I use so much antique software in previous jobs that really needs to get rewritten for the modern world, wasn't designed for this distributed kind of giant internet that we have today. And so I'm happy to see that. I think there will be a lot. I hope there's a lot more knowledge of the basics of networking just present in this whole software development community, right? Everybody who's involved in building and delivering software, because we need it, right? The old meme about the load bearing person in the internet, that's true. And I can name one of them, right?
You're making a distinction here that's interesting that I haven't come up in this conversation yet, which is to you, the modern networking stack is in part infrastructure as code. That is, you alluded to, I'm assuming you're talking about CloudFormation templates to begin to configure some kind of a networking construct within AWS. What do the rest think about infrastructure as code being a key element of the modern networking stack? Is that important to you?
Yeah, I was going to actually go back on what you're saying about back in the day, you had $600,000 to bring up a server in your networking at those costs. But now we're seeing that with the modern networking stack, where we are coding our networks and bringing that programmability into the automation, that is actually what is allowing us to do those a lot cheaper. Anyone can run a script from you log a ticket and level two picks up that ticket and goes, oh, you want a new VLAN? I'll just run this script. It's done. Whether or not they understand what they're doing, they just know that that VLAN that they're setting, type in, change it, run. And that's easy. It's the same as if you go to like a Unify's portal or a Aruba's portal. It takes seconds or a few minutes really to make that change, and it's done. It's not getting some of the specialized skills that has to go out, touch the CLI with console cable and make those changes.
Yeah, for sure. speaking of cloud, I've worked a lot with Azure Cloud, Microsoft's Azure. And the whole point of scaling after your needs is a big selling point there. You either go to the web portal, the GUI, so to speak, and you deploy a VNet or a virtual network gateway, and you pick the size. And, oh, wait, I need twice the performance. I need twice the users for this, or I'm going to deploy 10 sites for this IPsec gateway. I need to scale it up. I just click the drop-down list. I pick the second SKU for the size, and click apply, and it's done. Let someone else handle the billing.
And before cloud, we were doing that with VMware, right? You could go in, you can dynamically resize and so on, but you could stand up a virtual machine very quickly through clicks in the GUI in vCenter or vSphere, as the case may be. And so we all got used to that, that consumable model. Mark, in your world, you're dealing with a lot of infrastructure as code or automation, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, in network automation, what I'm trying to do is to get into all the many knobs of the many platforms and many systems and try to make them as part of one cohesive workflow. I mean, for as far back in time...
As in multi-vendor, where that has different capabilities, you're trying to unify...
Multi-vendor, multi-platform, yes, absolutely. Like many panes of glass, because there's never a single pane of glass, in my experience. But as long as we go back, I mean, a developer has always declared that this should connect from here to here, and we're getting better and better at actuating that and making a workflow around that, what I'm finding in the industry.
Getting better and better at that, but having to roll our own solutions. I'm guessing from what you're describing, you're having to roll your own, yeah?
Yeah, I imagine we'll get into this a little bit later, but like, you know, the vendor, for Cisco, for example, they'll say like ACI is over here, it's going to do your one shop, but then you get into the WAN and you have something else like NSO over here. And then you have two separate networking teams pointing at each other saying, my stuff's all red, but the other one says my stuff's all green. So how do you get those two working together? By getting the information out of those two systems and making it more one solution, delivering that application end to end. And that's in the cloud, it's much easier. It's a lot more cohesive. In the enterprise, in the service provider, maybe not. Maybe it's more fragmented, these systems.
So we're arguing then that the modern networking stack is necessary. There's multiple components to it. There are, on the one hand, you've got transport in the form of an overlay, VXLAN, et cetera, that is delivering us segmentation and security and those kind of features. And in a few cases, there's even unified security information, that metadata that helps identify flows that we can wrap policy around, and we can do that end-to-end from data center right out through the WAN and back again if we want. We've also got, as part of the modern networking stack, we're saying infrastructure as code, automation, being able to, with the click of a button and the right code behind it, stand up some kind of manage some kind of a network artifact through its lifecycle, not just stand it up, but also tear it down, also manage and monitor it, get reporting on it, compare our intended state, a golden config, if you will, to what's actually in production and so on. And that's all from the perspective of the four of you, necessary on some level or another. Is that fair to say, or would some of you say maybe it's necessary but maybe not?
Well, it's really hard to come back to the argument of build, borrow, and buy, right? When you buy certain things, it gets you moving faster. but maybe in certain scenarios, borrowing from open source and like Grafana, ElkStack, Zabbix, and such like that, maybe it gives you a more solution that you're more comfortable with. And then the build, it's a really hard road, but maybe your use case is so bespoke. So like anything else in networking, it depends.
To deliver the functionality that a business needs, and maybe this gets more to what's been twisting my brain in a knot for a while now, do we need all of these features and complexity between overlays and automation and so on? Is that okay? So let me take a step back. Vendors build stuff so that we will buy the stuff. That's how, you know, if we hadn't advanced the art of routing and switching for the last 20 years and it was just the same box but faster, you know, that's kind of boring. The only reason you do a refresh is for a bandwidth upgrade so you can go a little bit faster. And so we get all these new features that are baked into things. We get all these clever solutions that are put out there and, you know, new branding and new whatever that you're supposed to buy into. And then sometimes that thing you buy into has a long life and a lot of people adopt it and there's a lot of software development behind it and it keeps getting better and you're glad you did that. And sometimes it's dead in the water after 2 years because not enough people bought it. Now you got this thing hanging around your neck that you're struggling to make use of because the vendors more or less abandoned it, except for the two guys that are still writing bug fixes to try to keep you happy, and you just can't wait to get rid of this albatross until there's something better to replace it with. And I guess where I'm going here is, do we need a lot of these solutions that have come to market from a business perspective, or couldn't we have accomplished many of the same goals with simpler networking constructs? VLANs, access lists, maybe VRFs, and isn't that good enough? And I guess the answer is, maybe it really is as simple as it depends, but again, you guys got any thoughts on that?
I think outside of networking in general, it's just messy process, right? What any given business needs, every business is different and thinks they need different things, whether they do or don't for real. That's a different question. Doesn't really even matter, right? Because the perception is there. When you look at how, you know, Goldman Sachs or someone in the finance industry wants to do something versus someone in a medical industry or someone selling cars, it's going to be very different, right? Different scales, different topology, different requirements and compliance and ability to pay for it, right, as well, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a key factor.
Which is more than just capital expenditure and buying it. It's also a significant OPEX in the form of people and skills and so on. Yeah,
absolutely. And then this ongoing, you know, the obligation to understand it, like you said, it's that goes on forever as well. At the end of the day, I think the answer to your question is, yeah, we probably could have gotten by with just the standardized stuff, but the standardized stuff has been evolving too, right? Just that base level layer of functionality that, you know, it's more than just the bandwidth that you get when you do the upgrade, right? It's mm-hmm. other compatibility and capabilities. It's there's got to be a process for developing what that is. So, you know, vendors explore that space and make money on it in proprietary solutions that ultimately do trickle down to those standardized solutions that we all benefit from in kind of more uniform way, as long as they're reasonably accurately implemented.
You just said a mouthful right there, Lee. Oh boy. Yeah. So Anton, you're in that Forta world, and I think any of these kind of solutions for like from Fortinet, et cetera, there's some amount of vendor lock-in. Do you think that's fair to say? And if so, does that bother you?
Well, yes and no. I have customers, for example, that they run the Fortinet stack, but they also mix it in with HP Aruba. They don't get the unified management like we talked about previously, but it works well for them.
Aruba and, just for Wi-Fi or for other things too?
For other things too. Okay. In this case, it's switching. core switching. In their case, they felt that their network needed simplicity rather than maybe the whole unified management stack. We decided to do that solution, that design choice or.
Okay. Anybody else care about vendor lock-in or have an opinion on that?
I think with NSX, going back to that virtual world, we have been spoiled for choice by the amount of features that NSX provided, and watching the Broadcom fiasco that's been going on, where people are trying to move away with their underlying hypervisor during costs and all of those changes. A lot of service providers are locked in because of what ability NSX provides, and there not being another vendor out there that can provide the same suite of features. Because with NSX, you could log in as a customer. If you want to deploy SD-WAN with VeloCloud, you were able to do that. Just configure it within the portal, send out a VeloCloud, let it connect in. Almost as simple as that. This IPsec, NAT, firewall features, BGP, OSPF, like it was just full of functionality within that entire stack. But trying to find another product that you can do, either vCloud could talk to if you want to do it that way, or if you want to move to like Nutanix, or it's not there. But we were spoiled by that one product, and we are kind of locked into that to be able to just be able to offer all that. That's sort of my side with vendor lock-in. Whereas with our Fortinet stacks, we don't see that because we just run whatever switches we want. Like some customers have Aruba switches that we're managing through their portal, but we've got a FortiGate running in front of it as well, providing their SD-WAN. So it's not so much vendor lock-in there, it's just simplicity for us.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because in the Fortinet stack, you could actually run Fortinet switches if you want and have it all be, you know, part and parcel of the same thing. But you don't have to do that, is your point, if you don't want to, and still have comparable features and functionality.
Yeah.
Well, okay, guys, we're at the hour. I'm probably eating into some of your personal time at this point to continue this. So why don't we wrap here? Excellent conversation, and you did exactly what I was hoping for. You gave me some perspectives that I hadn't considered before, and I think there was a piece of this that I was missing, which is the programmable aspect of it. Particularly, Lee, where you're coming from and dealing with cloud networking, all that stuff that's going on under the hood is going to be some amount of overlays and abstractions, and so on, that allow all of those cloud customers to coexist on the same cloud provider infrastructure, and all that stuff matters. It does matter. And the vendor lock-in thing is yet another interesting question that maybe there's a whole other podcast to devote to that at some point, because it gets interesting with hardware and software dependencies and custom ASICs and unique and proprietary features, and then like what Kieran's dealing with NSX is the only tool that can do what I need it to do, so that I can offer these services to my customer. So let's go around the virtual roundtable, you know, one more time, and I'll ask each of you just to mention who you are, how people can follow you on the internet, if you got a blog you want to plug, or like Mark, I know you got the Toronto Nog that you've launched, and you want to mention anything like that, guys. You'll feel free, and let's start with Kieran.
So you can just find me on Blue Sky at resetvirtual.com, and same for my website is resetvirtual.com.
Thanks for joining us, Kieran, all the way from Australia, where it is literally the middle of the night right now. You drew the short straw of the time zone, so thanks for making the time.
No worries.
Anton.
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn and the Slack channel for Packet Pushers.
Excellent. Lee.
Yeah, the same. Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on Packet Pusher, so you can find me there. And if you're interested in some really weird networking software, you can check out proxility.com.
What you're doing is unique. Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. Mark Prosser.
As Ethan mentioned, yesterday was our inaugural event for Tornog, so you can reach out to me and get involved with that. But I also have a neglected blog, zeelnetworks.ca, and you can find me on LinkedIn and the Packet Pusher Slack.
All right. Thank you all for joining Heavy Networking today. And thanks to you out there for listening today. If you'd like us to gather more roundtable discussions, you can let us know what topic you want us to talk about, and we'll pull something together. And you can send that to us via packetpushers.net/follow-up. And please do all the things. You can share this episode on LinkedIn. You could like it on YouTube. You could buy some merch at store.packetpushers.net. You could subscribe to our awesome weekly newsletters. Join our Slack group like all these guys are in. That is packetpushers.net/community to join that Slack group. And you could also get a Heavy Networking tattoo. We'd appreciate that. All those fine services, again, available at packetpushers.net. Yeah, except the tattoo thing. You are definitely on your own there. Find a reputable artist that can ink a really clean, solid line, and you should be good. Until next time, just remember, too much networking would never be enough.